place, was that out of the state of Washington? Or, I mean, I knew Bob had his out of Illinois with the canine call.
Western suburb of Chicago, which is where I was born and raised. License was 1959. I was 12 years old then, so that's kind of the background. I'm good on QRZ, by the way. K9QJS.
Thanks so much for that. Appreciate that. I thought that was an Illinois call. Yeah, he was K9GRP, and I can't find him anywhere. It's been years. He was an adult when I was a kid, just about same age as you were, I think, at that time. So he was next door and had all the radios and stuff, and that's kind of how I got involved in that. Well, thank you, sir, for checking in. Anyone else want to check in?
Hey, Joe, this is KD0ZWU, Terry in Berthoud. Collins.
A double, but Terry, you beat him. Back for a while.
Hoping to be back for the rest of high school football season anyway. It's good to be back and into fall weather and fall sports.
We're sure glad you're back. You're an interesting gentleman to talk to. However, someone did double with you. Would you come back, whoever doubled with Terry?
Kilo, Delta 5, Oscar, Romeo X-ray, Joe, Fort Collins.
Oh, Joe, another one I haven't heard from a long time. How you been?
Good. I was monitoring last week. I didn't check in. But anyway, I'm doing great.
We're having an open forum tonight. We're not having a topic because I think that we're kind of overkilling the topic and probably not answering a lot of questions for folks. So every now and again, we're going to have an open forum. So it's like it used to be with the old thing. So thanks, Joe, for checking in. Anyone else want to check in for tonight's net, please call.
Hi, Joe, N7GES.
Kevin, what's new?
Not much. I'm going to be kind of in and out this evening, so I may not be available always. If you ask me a question, I will do the best I can.
Not a problem. Appreciate that information. Anyone else want to check in for tonight's net, please call.
WIQ and that denim about back in touch.
N0WIQ, go ahead, Carrie.
When you put them in a situation where the plate glows, if you let it go long enough, it'll just burn out the tube. And I just wanted to put that addendum on there, but it was an amplifier my father built. He had an aluminum chassis he built and put the tube in so he could look down on it and see that. He had me watch the tube while he was spinning dials, so to speak. So that's the gist of the story. Back to net.
Great addendum, too. Yeah, he's absolutely right. If you never fool with a tube amp, it's a whole different ballgame. They're very unforgiving, but I understand solid states are, too. So I do, when you're dealing amplifiers, I guess you got to be smarter than the amplifier. And before we had the thing, I wasn't smarter than the amplifier. But thanks to an awful lot of people who helped out, and I do appreciate Dan. I appreciate James. Came over and gave me a hand with this thing. We got her up and running. Finally, we've only owned it about a year, and we finally got it up and running. Anybody else want to check in for tonight's net, please call.
Kilo Echo Zero, Hotel India Mike, Rick to Fort Collins.
Howdy, Rick, what's new with you?
Oh, not a whole lot. Pretty much the same old same. But I did notice a little while ago, the signal seemed like it dropped a little bit, like everybody was walking around with a handheld. And I don't know if anybody else heard that, but I noticed it. I could see it in my meter on this radio, and then watch it in my handheld. I could hear that noise. So I don't know what's up with that. Maybe it's weather. I don't know.
Well, it does affect this, but we also have some problems up there, too, which we're trying to address. We've sent out, we basically got the okay from the board, or actually from the club, to go ahead with our little project. And to the best of my knowledge, it's in Doug Sharp's hands in Denver, and he's ordered the parts, and we will get to it. Our biggest problem is we're worried about we're going to get snowed in here pretty quick, because Horsetooth is literally impossible to get to once it snows, so... and that's the problem. It's all Horsetooth.
Hopefully all that stuff will get here and people can get up there and get it put up.
If I remember right, Jane said it could be like a 2 or 3 trip deal. Can't remember what he said. He mentioned to us. We'll learn all about it next week, but... I haven't paid for anything yet, so I'm just waiting to hear.
Can't even get up there with snow machines, huh?
Well, you might be able with snowmobiles, I don't know. And I'm not sure that they're allowed up there, I just don't know. But I do know that James and Greg tried to get up there one time, and they basically were tying onto a tree and pulling the Jeep up, and they struggled with that for hours, I guess. And I said, gee, the first time I would have done it, I would have turned around and came back down. So you got to give them credit for trying. But, yeah, it's really dangerous to do that kind of stuff.
Boy, that's for sure. Okay, well, get some more check-ins.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate that, Rick. Anybody else want to check in for tonight's net, please call.
WIQ with a comment about the Horsetooth job for this repeater.
And 0WIQ, go ahead, Carrie.
Well, when James said it'd be a 3 or 4 trip up there, he's got an antenna to change, he's got bead line to replace, he's got some bead line jumpers to replace, and all that kind of stuff. Not to mention some tune-up to boot. But I can understand the 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, for sure. You're absolutely right. I have no idea. I mean, I've been up with him on various jobs and things like that. And he's much smarter than I am. So he just says, do this, and I do it. And I really don't know what I'm doing. But you're absolutely right. That's all part of it. Thanks, Gary, for that. Anyone else want to check in for tonight's net before we get going? Please call.
Hilo Delta. Gordon and LaSalle.
I'm sorry. All I got is LaSalle out of that, and I should know who this is, but I cannot copy it. Is it Ken?
Hilo Delta 0, Kilo Golf Fox, Gordon and LaSalle.
Oh, Gordon, okay, we got you that time. How's Gordon doing tonight?
All right. I haven't been on the net in a while. I just keep spacing what time it is and everything else, how time flies.
Well, I do appreciate you coming on today. That's really great. Hope you got lots of questions. Anyone else want to check in for tonight's net, please call.
WF, Jim and Loveland, first time checking in for the net.
Is that KE0JE, JWF, is that correct?
That is correct. Kilo Echo 0, Juliet Whiskey Foxtrot.
And what's the name, sir? Jim, you're new to us tonight. Are you new to radio or just new to this area?
Oh, pretty new, Ham. I got my tech ticket about 4 or 5 months ago and just got my general ticket 2 weeks ago.
Oh, did you happen to catch any HF this weekend? Boy, California was going nuts.
No, I still have to get an antenna. I got the Yaesu 8900R. All I have right now for an antenna is the dual band for the 70 centimeter and 2 meter.
That 8900 is a good radio. It'll get you out. Never really, I've got something that's equivalent to it, and I've nearly never done anything 10 meter on. We've done 6 with it, and of course 2 and 70. In fact, I'm actually on it now. So it'll do you good.
Yeah, I've been impressed with it so far from what I've used on the 2 and 70. I'm able to get the horse tooth repeater pretty much anywhere I go up in the mountains. As far as up Hooter Canyon and Big Thompson, I'm just using my handheld up in Estes Park yesterday, talking to a friend that was up on the Cheyenne Ridge. So, been happy with them.
Well, cool, Jim. Thanks so much for checking in. Anyone else want to check in for tonight's net, please call. Okay, let's open this thing up for questions. Right off the bat, does anybody have anything that they'd like to ask? Remember this, you do not have to be a member of the club to be part of this thing. And if you have any questions, we have 3 experts on right now. And so we're looking for any type of question, whether it's how to paint the pole that you're putting up, what to do about wind, or anything else. Please call. Okay, let's go down the line and see if we can round up somebody. KE0EZU, Mike, what's new with you with that big monstrous ICOM you got over there?
KE0EZU. Hey, Joe, I'm not even on that one right now. I'm on my little handy-talky. You know, if I'm coming in and getting to you, that'll have to work for now. No, I don't have any questions, Joe. I've been busting my brains trying to think of something to say. But I don't have it right now. Back to you, Joe.
Okay, thanks so much. How about W0JBR? James, you got to have some questions about that big old tower you got going up.
W0JBR, actually, anything I need to work on would be when somebody is over here and can actually get up on top of it, but Bill and OJ were a big help and gave me a couple of ideas of things I need to do, and otherwise tonight I'm just kind of listening, and if anything comes to mind, I'll give a holler. So thanks, Joe. W0JBR, back to net.
Okay, you bet. KD0ZWU, have you got anything for us this evening, Terry?
Well, in fact, I do. I have a problem with radio noise in my PT Cruiser. And I'm thinking about installing a radio in it into the battery. Right now I just use an HT on a mag mount, but my AM broadcast radio receiver is receiving all kinds of engine noise. And it's really strange because you tune to an unoccupied channel and you'll hear the engine whine. But you tune to an occupied channel and you hear a different sound and it changes. For example, if I push in the clutch, the audio noise changes. So I'm really curious as to what the nature of this problem might be.
N7GES.
N7GES, go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, Terry, I wonder if the sound is digital in nature, maybe coming from your car computer, which might be, you know, responding to things like the clutch and stuff. Does it seem to be RPM related, or is it more of a steady sound when you've got the broadcast station tuned in?
Yeah, Kevin, it might be related to the computer. When I have a station tuned in, and it has to be a sort of a semi-weak one, if it's a really strong AM broadcast station, then it seems to overwhelm all the noise and no problem. But if I'm listening to a weaker station, then the noise can definitely occur. It seems to be either time or temperature sensitive. Sometimes it'll be there, sometimes it won't be. It's not really a time of day. It's not the AM signal strength, I know that. But it's something that's not constant in the vehicle.
K7ABB.
K7ABB, go ahead.
Other question for you on that. You mentioned in your description that it sounded like a whine. Does it vary in frequency? Does it go up and down dependent upon speed and things of that nature? Amplitude can vary just because of signal strength, but does the actual frequency and sound change when you accelerate or decelerate?
KD0ZWU. When I'm tuning to a station, that is a weak station or a moderate strength station, the interference does not seem to be related in any way to vehicle RPM or engine RPM, vehicle speed, anything like that. It's not the zzzz that you get with the engine noise, but it's more like a whoop 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 whoop.
That sounds more computer related, but almost have to be one of those things that you listen to be able to identify it there. But I'm wondering, do you have any? You're using an HT in the car. Do you have it with the HT?
I do not hear it on the HT either, 2 meter or 70 centimeter, and I never had any reports from anybody that I'm talking to about that. Now, I've never had the HT plugged into the car electrical system either. I've always just run 100% battery.
Could be an alternator whine, but if it's not changing in frequency when you accelerate or decelerate, that almost rules that out. So I'm leaning more towards the computer stuff. What you may wind up having to do is put some kind of a filter choke in line with the positive lead of your power going to your radio to eliminate that. Oftentimes that will take care of it, but not in every case. It just depends on really what the source is. So, like I say, it almost be worth having somebody come listen to it.
GES.
7GS, go ahead.
Just a quickie, is this the radio that the car came with, or something else you put in?
No, Kevin, it's a stock radio, and this started, it's a 2001 model, so 15, 16 years old. And this started, you know, I'm an avid AM radio listener, and so this started about 6 months ago, and it's been getting progressively worse. And I think it's to K7ABV Randy, I think is his name. I also do get alternator noise, engine whine, but I have to tune to an unoccupied frequency, so the effect inside the radio is dependent upon the carrier tuned to, not the frequency so much, but whether you have a strong carrier, a weak carrier, or no carrier.
Zero WIQ, I'll come in on this too.
Zero WIQ, go ahead, Carrie.
Well, if it's the stock radio, theoretically you should have all the filtering it needs to play the radio, but if you say it's something that just started, something has come loose someplace. In the chassis, in the engine compartment, any number of places. But something has come loose to aggravate the situation. And that's my comment. So, been in any wrecks or anything that might have loosened something up? Or over some rough roads that might have loosened something up? This is N0 to BIQ.
Hey, Carrie, yeah, thanks for the advice. I travel on rough roads, dirt roads, and some of them are washboard, you know, government-maintained things that are kind of rough. I do that routinely, so I've been bouncing this vehicle around quite a bit. No accidents, but definitely have, I get some washboard effect on this thing on a regular basis.
Well, vehicles that new probably use crimp connections and all the wiring connections. And that washboard could have caused one or more of those to come loose. And then there is the sheet metal hardware and all that kind of stuff that could have come loose and all that too. So I think it's time to go through that thing with a fine-tooth comb in that respect. N0 WIQ.
W0JBR with a comment.
W0JBR, go ahead, James.
Also consider some of the newer cars will have an amplifier tucked away somewhere, whether in a deck lid or even in the door panels connected to the speakers. If I remember right, I think my Mustang, I think when one of the amplifiers started going out and started making some sort of a goofy racket. What he was kind of describing didn't sound so much like an alternator whine, but that whoop whoop, that could very well be maybe if there's an amplifier tucked in with one of the speakers in the panel or somewhere, that might be also going stupid on him as well.
7 GES.
Excuse me, N7 GES, go ahead.
Well, the other thing that occurs to me, and this doesn't change what might be causing the interference, but it might change how you look for it, I guess, or something. Sounds like to me something might be heterodyning with the weaker radio signals, and that's why maybe you only hear alternator whine when you're off of a station, but the other noise when you've got a weak signal. And I take it none of this happens on FM, or do you not use FM much?
ZW, Terry?
A little bit of traffic here in the back, in the shack. Does anybody have any advice as to how to isolate the component that might be at fault? It sounds to me like, it feels to me like something went bad. I know about filter capacitors and things, but how to isolate the component that might be at fault. And I think I'm just concerned that if I put an amateur radio in there, it's going to experience the same kinds of issues with the electrical system.
N0WIQ, another comment?
N0WIQ, go ahead, Carrie.
Well, AM broadcast goes down to 500 kilohertz. So to interfere with one of those signals would have to be some subharmonic of that, probably. Loose connections someplace could act as a detector to some of this stuff, so you have a signal being double detected by the time it gets to the speaker. And the idea of amplifiers and door panels and other panels so that the amplification is spread out among things could indicate that, again, a loose connection making a detector so that it makes noise in the speaker. Yeah, that's basically the thought pattern I have. And yes, you can take the radio out of the car, power it with a 12-volt battery, put an antenna on it and a speaker on it so you can hear what's going on, and see if you lose all the noise. And then you'll know whether it's the vehicle, the radio, or something else.
GES again.
As long as we can stay in here, N7GS, go ahead, Gary. Kevin.
Now, Terry, have you tried with the car idle and manipulating things? And have you tried the radio with the motor not running and see if things are still affecting it? That might be some ways to try to isolate some of that, too.
Kevin and Carrie, both, yes, I have. In fact, when the vehicle is in the accessory position, the noise is absent. When the vehicle is in the run position, the noise is present, again, for the medium-strength signals. And, of course, the engine whine for the clear channels is absent when the engine is off.
KD0 KGF. There was somebody KD0, I didn't catch the rest, go ahead.
KD0 KGF, this is Gordon. I would, while it's being parked, or while you're running it, pull fuses and pull one at a time. That way you can isolate a little more and just narrow it down that way also.
You, KD0ZWU.
Anyone else have a comment about this? I think somebody was in there and I think we had a double, so come back.
ABB.
ABB, go.
Yeah, you made an interesting observation there, and I'm needing a little bit of clarification. You said that when it's in the accessory position that it was gone, but when it was in the normal operating position, it was there. Is that with the engine running or without the engine running? If it's just in the on position without the engine running and you've got it, then it's going to probably indicate a little bit more about where it's at.
Yeah, I thought about that just as I released the talk switch on my previous answer. Yeah, it exists in the on position when the engine is both running and both not running, pretty much equally. And I said the oddest thing is that when you push the clutch in, it changes dramatically. It doesn't go away, but it certainly changes. Other things, directionals, I don't know if any other electrical circuit, but definitely pushing the clutch in has a dramatic effect on the noise.
KGF comment.
Go ahead.
If you're stepping in on the clutch and it goes away, that tells me just something. Maybe I would run some extra in these new cars since, the 90s on, they got poor grounds. And you need to run a battery ground to the engine directly and not through the frame and go a bigger and then back to from the battery to the frame. There's just not enough. A friend of mine worked in a transmission mechanic and they have the corrosion problems because they're using the transmission as a ground.
N0WIQ.
Go ahead, Gary.
Well, the idea of pulling fuses one at a time is probably a valid idea, except that there's probably one or more fuses that make the vehicle run. So that you might cause it to stop running with one of those fuses, but hey, that's just something to watch out for.
ABB go?
Yeah, I agree with you there, Kerry, except that if he has it in the on position without the engine running and he still has the noise and he goes through and he's pulling fuses one at a time, I would think that, would substantially isolate it if that was the case. The comment about the poor grounds, you may wind up having to get grounding straps to actually use with your computer elements, because there are multiple computers on most of the newer vehicles, anyhow, anything 2000 and forward. So that may be an option that you might need to look at, because, like you said, that some of those are crimps, some of those are connectors, but anything that's not a good solid electrical ground. Something that's screwed in, something that's soldered, that type of thing. You can have some issues there where you've got a floater. K7 ABV.
KEO, or KE0 KBS with a comment.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay, I'm thinking along the same lines as the ground, but one question I have is if you have the key on, engine off, and you push on the clutch, does that make any difference? If so, then yeah, it very well could be a ground issue. The other thing I'd look at is, you know, I'm not real familiar with the vehicle to know whether it uses any kind of a mechanical linkage or strictly hydraulic for the clutch. But there's a possibility that something could also be rubbing and, you know, one of the wiring harnesses or something, especially if you've been down a bunch of washboarded roads. Something could be loose and that linkage is causing something to move or get pinched or something that's creating that interference.
N0 WIQ with another thought.
N0WIQ, go ahead, Gary.
If there has been a light that's been shaken apart so that it's an open circuit on one of the circuits, that could be a source of noise too. So, start with the easiest stuff to check out and work your way down to where the noise comes from.
KE0HIM with comment. KE0HIM, go ahead, Rick.
Well, it probably has a clutch safety switch on it that you have to push the clutch in before the starter will engage. And he says it changes the noise level or the frequency of the noise when he pushes in the clutch. That switch could be dirty, corroded up inside, and causing that too. So, just a thought.
Terry, KD0ZW, anything else?
I've been writing down notes and trying to correlate them in real time to my actual experience. This is a bit of a mystery, but I very much enjoy and appreciate all the extra brains behind this, because it certainly has me baffled. KD0ZW. Any other comments for the book that Terry is writing? Please call.
again?
And 0WIQ, go ahead, Carrie.
Well, with this group of people that we have on this repeater right now, we're probably covering 20 or 30 years of automobile experience. And the older cars used to have more things coming loose with the corrosion and stuff like that. The newer cars are a little bit, what should I say, significantly changed. So what happens is happens. And when it comes to installing an amateur radio, my experience is isolate the radio from the car. Yeah, you have to take power leads back to the battery, make that a twisted pair. And you have to probably have to use the car body for an image plane on an antenna. So, yeah, you have to do that. But everything else, the radio is its own universe.
I think we pretty much covered it. Unless someone else has any comments, please call.
KD0KGF comment. Also on the switch, on the ignition, on the electrical side, on the back of the lock, those get pretty gritty in there because you're always starting on that side. But when you go to the accessory side, you're not. It's not dirty on that side because you don't use it. So if you get in there and you can clean those, and they get a lot of mileage on them, cause that's how everybody uses. KD0K.
Point. Anybody else? KD0ZWU, I guess, with a follow-up question for the group. Certainly, Terry. Go right ahead. Oh, my. I guess it gets into automobile knowledge, but I guess that's important for mobile radio. When you have the vehicle in the accessory position, is the engine computer engaged, or is it only engaged when you're in the run position?
KD0, it varies from years. Most of them, no, it's not on the real newer ones, yes, but on the older ones, no.
We consider new and old. I'm up with a number one suspect right now.
Well, anything in the last 7-8 years is maybe 10 years at the most. They're so computerized, you know, you stick your key in, or if you got a key file, you know, you don't have a key, you know, so you don't, that's all computerized. But anything that takes a key and is, you know, and you have to manually turn it, they get a lot of mileage on the start side, but not on the accessory side. And on the accessory side, you're not going through the computer. It's, with the exceptions, is if through the entertainment system on some of the vehicles they're using the computer. But as far as on the engine, no, it's going to the battery.
Yeah, this is a 2001 model, so I think it's somewhat light on the computers. N7GS, go ahead, Kevin.
There are electric clutches in some of these vehicles, right? Or some sort of electrical system involved in the clutch?
Just the neutral safety switch. Safety switch when you step in on the clutch is the only time that it activates so you can start it.
I think they went clutch, what they used to call fly-by-wire.
I know some ignition, or not the ignition, but the acceleration, accelerators are actually that way, but I'm not sure about a clutch.
Okay, thank you. N7GES.
Simpler when they went in hydraulic, but that's pretty much, I think that's the only thing they did. Some accelerators I know on BMWs and a couple of the other ones, I'm trying to think what it is, are what they call fly-by-wire Formula One cars are, which basically sends a potentiometer signal to the carburetor and then it actually works, so there's no cable system for that. But as far as the clutch and brakes, I think they're still all mechanical.
What brand of vehicle?
Kerry, this is a 2001 PT Cruiser, KD0ZWU.
Familiar with the specifics of that vehicle. And like Randy said, maybe it'd be worth having someone with more experience come and listen to your vehicle. But hey, we've covered most of the bases. So like I say, start at the simple stuff and work your way down till you make the noise go away. And it's always that kind of a troubleshooting situation with that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, and I'm grateful for the advice to help me narrow down where to start. Health.
Hey, are there no other comments about this? If somebody's got something to add, please do. If otherwise, we'll go move on to something else.
KD5ORX with a comment.
Go ahead, Joe.
I don't know if it's just the high-end cars that have the fly-by-wire or accelerator by wire, but I had a 2011 Chevrolet Impala that had the computerized accelerator, and I remember it very well because it went out and it cost me $400 to replace. So anyway, that's my comment.
Wait, I guess I didn't realize they $400 to put that thing in. What did they have to do, change both of them?
I don't know exactly. It's been a while, but I thought it'd have a cable in it like all the other cars I've owned. And the computer had some sort of a backup where you could drive it, somehow drive it at a low speed or something, a limp mode or something. But when the dealer replaced it, I was in real sticker shock. So I was surprised that a lower-end Chevrolet Impala would have something like that. But it sure was pricey to fix.
That's good to know. That's good to know. I never thought about that. Other anything to add with for Terry?
WIQ with one more comment.
Go ahead, Kerry.
It's always good to isolate a problem yourself so that when you take it to a repair shop, you can know whether they're trying to screw you or not. But On the other hand, if you take it to a repair shop and they throw up their hands, you know it's serious.
Of course, I've got kind of a long story, but to make a long story short, I got a 99 F-150. It was throwing a code for a throttle positioner. And that took us almost 6 to 8 months to fix it. And I actually had it in two different shops. I actually had it in one shop, and they had somebody come in who was a computer guy. I'm going to let this drop. And we ended up almost rewiring the whole truck and replacing the computer. And that's what it actually was. It was quite a lengthy and expensive process to do it. We had close to $16,000 to $2,000 in all the stuff. So you're absolutely right, but you just don't know. And some of this stuff will stump even the best experts. Comments or questions about this? Let's move on if there's no other addendum for that. Anybody else have a question that they'd like to ask the group? HIM. Rick, you got anything to add tonight?
Well, I did think of something, but hopefully it won't be too lengthy to answer, I guess. I'm just curious about co-phasing antennas, base antennas. I know you used to put co-phased antennas, CB antennas on, and they had equal length coax, 18 feet long. And I guess maybe part of the question is the coax length related to wavelength of the frequency?
WIQ?
10-0 WIQ, go ahead, Carrie.
Well, the short answer to that is yes, the coax length is frequency related, so that it can change impedance for something or change the phase, because it will can be used to change the phase, because it takes time to go through a longer coax than a shorter coax, and that will change the phase. So you have to cut them the appropriate length to get the phases so that they are additive rather than not additive.
Know if they have a formula calculator type thing out there like they do for making verticals and dipoles and Yagis or whatever, have a co-phasing formula or a calculator.
Well, that will vary with the type of coax and vary with several variables, including the distance between the verticals to co-phase and things like that. So, but there are formulas out there for such things. I just don't know how to find them because it's something I never did.
E0ZWU with a comment. Terry, I'd like to ask, with the issue of co-phasing, are they, I think it's Rick, is he trying to, are you trying to just make the lengths of the antennas, the lengths of the cables to the antennas equal and just deal with the antenna pattern, or are you trying to shift the antenna pattern from an equal length feed situation?
Well, I don't know how to, I'm not really doing it. I just had thought about it little bit, and you know, I don't really understand the whole process of how it works. So I thought it'd be kind of interesting to hear some stuff on it. Distance apart and length of coax in, you know, going from your, I'll call it a splitter, to your antennas, I suppose, makes a pretty big difference.
Oh, yes, and I can speak to this at length because I do this for my day job. I'd like to know, could you please describe what you're trying to do and what your, like, physical configuration of your two antennas are?
I guess I opened a can of worms that I don't have any antennas per se right now to do this with of equal. I don't know. Let's just say I had two meter vertical antennas, quarter wave vertical antennas for 2 meters.
Okay, that's good. Then let's say you were mounting them on a vehicle, and you were mounting them a couple of meters apart for on each side of the vehicle, like on the mirrors of a truck or something. In that case, if you have equal length coaxial cable to both antennas, then your antennas will be in phase going forward and backwards from your vehicle, and they may or may not be out of phase, depending on their spacing, going to the driver's side or the passenger side, left or right. That will depend entirely on the separation of the two antennas and the frequency you're using.
Yeah, that makes sense. But now, would you have to have your coax going where they come to a Y? That would have to be a specific length, wouldn't it? Not just cut to whatever equal length.
Negative. So long as the lengths are equal, and equal was means electrical, not physical, and I have recent experience on that, but you need to be equal length cables to as close as you can possibly get. Certainly, 1 inch would be too much, and at least in my opinion, would be too much difference. But you definitely need equal length cables in that case. It doesn't matter what the length is, it needs to be equal.
Okay, well, that changes the way I thought about it. All right, well, I just thought it'd be an interesting question to hear answered. I'm probably not going to try that. I used to do that with CB antennas, but it didn't seem like it didn't work very good.
WIQ?
Zero WIQ, go ahead, Gary.
Well, you look at how to build a Yagi. You make all the elements about a quarter wavelength apart. So I would presume on a phased vertical like that, you'd want the verticals about a quarter wavelength apart, because that would be the maximum possible transfer. Now, to get them in phase so that they're additive, you would have to have a Y of some sort with equal length wire going to each vertical. And then from that Y, the feed line from that to that down to the radio is rather arbitrary, but yeah. I just wanted to, what should I say, reinforce the idea there, but I wanted to add in the quarter wavelength distance because, hey, if you look at a wave, at a quarter wave or a quarter cycle, that's the peak of the wave. And if you have to travel a distance of a quarter wave, then that peak of the wave goes to another peak of the wave, that sort of thing. So, hey, this is an image kind of thing you need to think about.
K7AVB.
7ABB, go ahead.
Okay, this is coming from AWRL. One method for feeding two 50-ohm antennas might be if they were used in a stacked Yagi array, is to have the transmission lines being equal length and odd multiples of a quarter wavelength. That's going down to where you meet them with a T. The impedance of each antenna goes to 100 ohms, but when you connect them with the T in parallel at the coax fitting, it'll be close to 50 ohms.
0HIM, Rick, did you get that?
Yeah, I was trying to write some of that down, and odd multiples, okay. That one there, I don't know what that is.
ABB, supplement.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, it, what it's saying basically is 1, 3, 5, 7, you can space them in that the odd quarter wavelengths apart, and so you just wouldn't want to make it just a half wave. You want to make it, and this is borne out by some of the repeater antennas that I've got here, that they'll use three quarter wavelengths in between elements of the antenna. That gives it enough spacing where you don't have any interaction going on, other than the gain that you're achieving by phasing them. So by adding that together, well, you wind up multiplying your gain over a period of time there, but depends on how many elements you want to do. The source material for this was 1983 Amateur Radio Handbook, and looking under phasing antennas.
Yeah, now I get it now. I understand what you're talking about. Yeah. If I was going to do something like that, instead of doing the verticals, I'd probably just make another Yagi and then put them up that way. Anyway, KE0HIM, thanks a lot for all that.
7ABB, back to net.
Comments about that to Rick. Are there any other questions for the net?
WIQ, just a little bit.
Sure, go ahead, Kerry.
Well, the image of a sine wave, for instance, starts out as some zero crossing, then goes to some peak at a quarter wave, comes back to the zero crossing, and goes to the opposite peak at a quarter wave. So at a half wave is both zero and zero. And then the quarter wave is peak and peak. That's the reason why we're talking about quarter wavelengths, because peak to peak is a half wavelength apart, but they are on quarter wavelength sections of the sine wave.
And that's the picture I have in my mind thinking about this spacing on it.
Well, that's good to keep that image in your mind for just about anything you want to think about on antennas. Because, hey, that's where the quarter wavelength comes into the equation. Is because quarter wavelength is a peak, half wavelength is a zero, quarter wavelength is not a peak. So now we're talking one quarter is a peak, two quarters is a zero, three quarters is another peak.
Way to think about it. Okay, back to K0HIM. Back to net.
Thank you much for those comments. Anybody else have anything for Rick? Do you have any other questions for the net? Question to ask you people, basically is to do the format. Thinking about every now and again putting an open forum out like we did this evening, we had two very good questions and a very good discussion about this. And do remember that these are discussions, and we're hoping that through those discussions we can help out whoever happens to be on. Let me go down the list here and see what everybody thinks about this. James, are you still there, W0JBR? What if we did, like every other week, maybe doing an open forum? W0JBR, I like the open forum format. It does tend to bring people to the net there that kind of have questions off the cuff, and it does make for some interesting discussions. And likewise, if people want to, you know, email them in or however it might be, but I tend to like the open format, Joe. Thanks for that, James. Kerry, N0WIQ, what do you think?
On occasion, you could work on amateur radio operation, like either from the handbook or the operating book manual or whatever, and talk about that a little bit. And of course, talking about RF theory is a good idea once in a while. And open forum works for most of the time anyway, so. That's the way I think about it.
Excellent. Thanks, Kerry, for that thing. N7GES, Kevin, I don't know if you're still in there.
Yeah, sorry, missed the question. I think if anything else to add, I'm not sure what the question was. I'm sorry. Come again.
I'm just taking kind of a poll on opening this thing up. Instead of having just a topic to talk about, having more open forums and things like that, and then maybe throwing in every now and again, just kind of doing either every other week or something like that. In other words, the open forum, I think, worked this time. Your opinion on the open forum versus the individual topic?
Oh, okay. I think you should do both. The topics are excellent, and but, you know, like once a month, once every 2 months or something like that, I don't know, maybe more often you do an open forum. Man, you'd cover a lot of stuff that way because you'd cover the topics, the various topics, and you'd also cover user questions. I think either one or both. I don't think I would drop one or the other, actually. I think I would do both somehow.
Well, that's my thought. We would do all every other week or something like that, so we keep it up. So thank you for that. KE0EZU, Mike, Mr. Cook, what do you think? Mike left us. KE0HIM, Rick, what do you think?
Definitely both. I enjoy the topics, but I also enjoy the questions that come up because it makes me think, try to think of a way to help answer it sometimes. So, yes, I definitely want both.
Okay, Rick, thanks for that. Terry, KD0ZW, what's your vote?
Joe, I actually like the open forum as a, like a go-to, but it's always good to have a discussion topic in case there aren't any questions. So that's sort of my, what I think is kind of the best approach is start with an open forum, and if there aren't any, then have a topic on hand to talk about. Normally, since we've taken up this new subject, we basically have always asked first if there's any questions, and normally we don't get any questions, and I don't go out and petition for them like we did this evening. But I always like to try to publish that particular item so that people can read up on it if they'd like. And there's no reason to do research on this unless you want to on the certain subject. So. Okay, Terry, I got definitely your answer there. K7ABB, what's your vote?
I would say that both have their place. Certainly, the open question forum is a good way to get specific things answered. On the other side of the coin, part of this, from my understanding, is an educational thing, particularly for new hams, and so being able to guide how that might go is helpful as well. So I would say don't do away with either one, but I would probably do it kind of on a split.
Makes sense to me. I think you're thinking the same thing I am, okay? Very good. Thank you very much. Let's go to KE0KBF. Dean, what's your vote? Dean's left. How about Levi? Levi, you out there?
I'm out here. I like every other week kind of gives some variety, and especially for those of us who are still experiencing that steep learning curve with radio, I think it allows the best of both worlds to both have the open discussion one week and then the structured topic next week. That would be my vote.
Thanks, Levi, for that. Troy, are you still out there?
Yes, I'm still here. I would say both, and maybe have it open, at the end, have it open to open questions also.
Good. Thank you very much for that. Joe, are you still in there?
Yeah, this is Katie 5ORX. Yeah, I like either format. They're both interesting to listen to and informative, so I think what you're doing is great. That's my comment.
Hey, thanks for that, Joe. Gordon, you still in there? Heard Gordon, I guess he's not. KE0JWF, Jim, are you still in there? Would you like to vote?
I'm still here. I've listened to a few of the nets. Like I said, this is the first one I've checked in on. I like the option of both and having a topic. It has a good purpose, and then leaving an open question for people. Looking for answers. I like both.
Okay, Jim, thanks so much for that. K9QJJ, are you still, or I'm sorry, K9QJS, are you still out there? I guess he left us off. That's all I have on the list here, people who checked in. Is there anybody else that didn't check in that'd like to make a comment?
David in Fort Collins.
Go ahead, sir.
So I've been listening in on some of these nets and even, asked a few questions here or there. And, in the past we've always had kind of an open forum at the beginning and then we move into a scheduled topic of discussion. And I've kind of liked that brief open forum in the beginning. And I feel like since this particular net is not especially time-boxed, that format works really well. A few quick questions in the beginning, an interesting topic, as the main topic of discussion, and some ability to contribute alongside of that.
Excellent comment. We are not time blocked, but we do have certain people that, for instance, like we've lost two or three people tonight, and it's probably due to they had things to do or things like that, and that's the only reason why. I will always ask for questions before any subject is actually done, and then afterwards I'll ask for questions too. But I have to be kind of time looking at when we start getting into 90 minutes to 2 hours, I kind of got to look at that and say, you know, we might want to back this off just a little bit. But that's my only issue is that we could have a four-hour discussion and we could go till, 10, 11 o'clock, and I'm not sure that that's a valid thing to do.
VIQ.
Go ahead, Carrie.
Well, I like the idea of asking for questions. If somebody has something on their mind that they want to know about, we can try to answer those and have a subject in the background that you can pose after the question and answer, and maybe put a hour and a half time limit on the net so that people don't run into conflicts in the course of the net. How's that sound? I mean, tonight we've got an hour and a half. And, hey, for those that were curious about it, yeah, we don't really have a time limit, but maybe there ought to be one, just to keep things more manageable.
I agree. Occasionally I have to go to work earlier on Tuesday, but it's very rare. So I'm not really under any time constraint, but I do look at other people that have to get up. I've got a neighbor that actually gets up at 4 o'clock every morning, actually leaves at 4 o'clock, so I'm not sure what time he gets up. But anyway, we have to kind of be kind of somewhat timely on it, and only just to be, but I also want the questions answered that people can do, or at least the discussion about those questions. Does anyone else want to comment?
KD0ZWU.
Harry, go right ahead, sir.
I think 90 minutes is probably about the right amount of time for this net.
I kind of agree, but I think it was the last one, the one before that, went 2 hours and 20 minutes. It got to the point to where everybody was getting tired, including me.
Yeah, it's like it's not a hard limit, but, work for 60 is kind of cutting it short, and if it goes to 2 hours, fine.
Well, Sherry's question about his car, there was, a dozen different answers at least, so that took quite a bit of time. Other questions don't take as much time, but, yeah. And as you know enough about the RF theory, or an RF signal, I should say, a sine wave signal, you can answer a lot of questions just by thinking in terms of the wavelength and how that signal is shaped. So, hey, the more people know, the fewer the questions become. Somebody just starting out, maybe an operation question, is it?
Absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Jumping from UHF, VHF to HF, it's like, it's like driving a Falcon and then you get into a Maserati. I mean, it's just totally different. It's definitely a culture shift, if you will, when you deal with that type of thing. So you're absolutely right. Those are things that we should basically discuss. Any other comments? Okay, next week, we've hit on this subject before, but it's been kind of as a broad type base.
what I'd like to talk about next week is an HF antenna and dealing with ground wires, image planes, and also talk a little bit about DXing, about low-profile antennas compared to high-profile antennas and what the various versions would be different on. So that'll be the subject for next week. And again, we will definitely take questions, and it's kind of our backup subject, but I want to let everybody know so they, if they'd like to do some backup research on it. But we have discussed this once before, but it was in context with some other things. I think a question was asked. But I'm getting a lot of, let me let this drop. I'm getting a lot of people that are calling me saying, do I need this? What do I need? And, well, the manufacturer says I don't need to have anything. Well, yeah, okay. So these are things that I think we need to discuss, and I may be wrong, in my opinion, which I've been proved to be wrong a lot of times. So anyway, is there any other business or any questions for the net?
Kilo Echo Zero, Hotel Hotel X-ray with a quick question.
Certainly, go right ahead.
I know you're probably going to talk about this on Wednesday, but just so I can do some planning. Heard some mention of a meeting on Saturday. Can you elaborate on that?
Okay. Do a little promotion for Wars. Weld Amateur Radio Society has a meeting down at the Golden Corral in Greeley, not Loveland, but Greeley. And it's kind of an interesting thing because we're going to be dealing with the linking project that NCART did. We're talking about tying into that. And Bill Dawson is going to do a presentation on, I think it's vacuum tubes, if I remember right.
And that's an open meeting for everybody?
Absolutely. Anybody that wants to come, you betcha. In fact, we would like to see more people show up. It's a lot smaller group than NCART, but it's actually a little bit more cozy, if you will. There's a lot of knowledge in that group, and it's a good group to work with. So yeah, anybody can come. Do not have to be a member. It's the same deal. It's a breakfast. At about 8 o'clock or so, and then we'll start the meeting about 9.
Sounds good. Thank you. K0HHX.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I forgot about it. I was going to mention it earlier. Again, WARS meeting, World Amateur Radio Society, is over at the Greeley. It's off of 23rd Avenue, I think. Greeley Golden Corral. Again, we'll have breakfast from 8 to 8:30, something like that, and then we will have a small business meeting, somewhat similar to NCART, and also that. So, any other questions? Okay, well, the net lasted 95 minutes tonight. We had about 20 check-ins. I'd like to thank everybody that checked in, and remember, we have our Wednesday night club net, which will start at 6 o'clock. We start our preamble at 6:30. We take early check-ins on that one. So if there's nothing else, everybody have a pleasant evening. And it's KD0TYU. The repeater is open for general use.